are 5 minutes late. Members, welcome to the committee meeting. Let's welcome our new member, Tuk Tuk. Those who have gone to India, they know there's something called Tuk Tuk. I'm not sure whether you're Tuk Tuk or Tak Tak, but it's one of those. Agnes, she is deployed here by the African National Congress. Welcome. We hope you'll enjoy it. Originally, she's from Northern Cape. So welcome to the portfolio committee. We hope you'll enjoy yourself in this committee. Because we know you are very busy with telecommunications, so we didn't worry when we are not seeing you. We knew it was heavy there. So, but welcome back. I thought you were coming because the DG and the minister is going to be here. You wanted. Okay, members, welcome everybody. We're using a different venue today, and this has got a lot of cameras. I'm not sure why they're putting us in this one with cameras. Maybe they want to show that because of my melanin in my skin, I'm too dark. They want to show that even some people from Central Africa can check on me too. So you mustn't kill. You mustn't kill them. Members, I think we don't have to waste time. Let's just go on. Fortunately, I'm told that the department is here. Today, we're going to be listening to the department about their strike plans. And the department is led by the minister herself. So, and the DG. Everybody is here. So, welcome, members. I think though you are known, except for Agnes, I think we'll have to introduce ourselves and tell them, but before we introduce ourselves, there are just a few comments that I just wanted to make at least that we are a portfolio committee for health, and we've been looking at the department. Oh.
Science and technology.
Sorry, once a doctor, always a doctor, once a doctor, always a doctor. So, pardon me. So, portfolio committee for science and technology, and we've been in the working with this department for almost nine months now, and we've seen the department, we've interacted with it, we've seen the entities where most of the money goes, and we've interacted with them. We have gone around the country talking to the societies, the communities about you. We've looked at the Auditor General's report. We've talked informally with the people from the department. And we've got some impression about the department. But there are some things that probably I need to mention on behalf of the portfolio committee, some of our observations. I'm not going to don't take them as something that needs to be done, but it's just observations that we have observed. The first one, which is very, which I think is interesting for us, is that we have observed that the department, unlike other departments, which can lament and say we're from a developing world. So give us an opportunity as we're developing. This department is the one that cannot lament about that. You've got to compete globally. You can't lament and say we're developing. You just have to compete. And in that competition, you've got to know that it's human resources, it's improving the economy of the country, of the continent, and of the world, because you are competing with the world. And we're talking about a department that has got innovators. When you talk of innovations and research and development, we are talking about transforming. And there are two transformations that we have observed that you have got to do. One transformation is to transform us from the difficult past that we had 21 years ago,
Now,
that has got to be done, and we think the key development to do that is you. That's the key development to transform with innovations, with research and development, and make policies that are going to transform the country. But there's another part of transformation. You know, the world is dynamic. And it being dynamic, it's always changing. Whether you had apartheid or you didn't have apartheid, you still have to transform. You've got to go on. I made an example the other time that I'm from deep rural areas from the Transkei. It used to take me 3 days to go to Joburg. But today it takes me an hour to go to Joburg. Those are innovations that were happening irrespective of apartheid. Those things are happening. And in fact, that reminds me of something that was said by Katrada, Comrade Katrada. I don't want to say Comrade, but Katrada. He said one day when they were sitting in Robben Island, somebody came to him and said, came to them and said, now you are going to be released from jail. And being released from jail, just wait for the facts that is going to come. It was a policeman. When that policeman left, they kept on asking, what is the facts, by the way? Because when they went to jail, there was nothing like a fax. So they had to ask, what is the fax? Because they didn't know about it. That's innovation that had happened within those days. It happened whether apartheid or not apartheid. That was going on. And the other one was Utoko Swale, who apparently went to where Mandela was before he was released. And he asked Mandela, why do you have two TVs? Only to find that it was there. What is the thing that you use to warm food?
Microwave.
He saw a microwave, he thought it was TV because there were no microwaves. You can ask him, he'll tell you. He thought it was another TV. So those are innovations, irrespective of what happened. Life is dynamic, it's moving. So this department is supposed to be helping us in making sure that the other things. Well, talking about the innovations, one thing that I thought it was a mistake 21 years ago was to think that when you want to build your economy, you can build it with less than 10 million people and give them science and maths and think that they'll be the lateral thinkers and the innovators. Obviously, that was killing the economy because economies depend on human capital. And they were leaving out the 40 million plus people and working on 10 million. So the work of this department is to make sure that the innovation is not only coming from 10 million, it's coming from the whole of the country, and that will make the economy of the country better. While I'm saying that the innovation should be, is, depends on this development, and it has to happen irrespective of whether we had apartheid or we didn't have. There has to be innovations. But even the wealth itself the wealth itself is not static. Things are changing. We are finding new viruses, new bacteria that we never had before, meaning that the environment keeps on changing. And it being changing, we need to be ahead of those changes as a people. And it can only be done by people who are innovators, who can do research and development. So we mustn't left behind by the other organisms. We must be ahead of those organisms because they seem to be trying to move ahead of us. So as human beings, we must be ahead of them. The environment is moving. I think the country depends on research and development. There's no country that just makes policies. You want to make policies having research what you are talking about, knowing what you are talking about. And this is the development that we think is key in those research and development. And in fact, some of us as a committee were trying to call for a vote on research and development. So that those developments for some smaller research and development in them they don't use the money for something just which was meant for research. So if they put the effort that is going to be looking at that, it would be better. But these are some of the things that you look at, you're going to look at yourselves. These are some of our observations. As the Department of Science and Technology, we know that the powers that are given might not impinge on other departments. But what we have noticed is that most of the things that they are doing are connected to other departments. You talk of higher education, you talk of basic education, you talk of DTI, you are connected, but there doesn't seem to be, you don't seem to have power to make sure that you can tell them what to do, neither do they have. So if we could find a way of integrating, if it means enacting some laws that are going to help you to do that, we are prepared, but that integration needs to happen. Otherwise, we won't see what we want to see at the end. So these are some of the observations that we have made. Well, I made a mistake at the beginning. I said the Portfolio Committee for Health is only because I stayed in medical school for almost 9 years. So that's why it's always in my mind. I apologize about that. But when I was in health, there's something that I noticed. That in our country specifically, I'm not sure about other countries, there's always that parallel movement between private and public. They're not working together. The other one is moving this way, the other is moving. It would be better if they were moving as a divergent angle, because if you move east and the other move west, you will meet somewhere on the way. But if you move in parallel, you will never meet. So that parallel movement, I think it needs to be stopped. And I seem to suspect that the department that can do that, looking at the innovations and the business that has to be helped by these new innovations, this department is very key in making sure that there could be that connection. And the last part, which is not the least, is that in talking about innovations, we seem to be driven that there are certain innovations that are conventional. There are certain innovations that are not conventional. I want to make an example. If I happen to find that there's umhlonyane who can cure flu in my area, that would be regarded as a traditional medicine. Even the fact that you say it's a traditional medicine, it means there's something that looks down upon that. And it's not seen as an innovation. Obviously, there might be something wrong in it because I don't know the dose. I don't know how much I must use to help or what side effects. But those are some of the innovations that we should take care of. Not that we're going to pass all of them, but we must look at them and see whether there's something good in them. Or because previously, 21 years ago, nobody used to look at them. But that must not scare those that are already in the industry. But we should find a way of making sure that if there's a new innovation, those who have been in the industry must not be scared about the new one, even if it means making them to work together so that they don't kill each other in the process, because one is paranoid that this other one is going to take my part in the economy. So these are some of the observations that we have done as a committee. I don't think we need a comment from you, but just tell us the strategic plans as you were going to tell us. But it was just our observations, and we're still going to continue being the Portfolio Committee for Science and Technology. I'm sure we can, now that the department is here, we can give over to them, but before we do that, let's introduce ourselves. Welcome, Whip. I see now you've cut your hair. I don't know why. Oh, you're following me. I hope the person who was cutting you was not killed because we were charging you, and you protected him, whoever it was. Okay, well, let's start with to introduce yourself.
Good morning, Chairperson, Minister, everybody. My name is Lindwe Masego. I'm from Alexandria, Gauteng.
Thanks, Chair Minister. Kassel Matale from Gwangwa Township, Limpopo. Thank you.
Morning, Minister, DG, and the company. My name is Maisela Gekan from Mauting, ENC.
I'm Agnes Tuck. Sorry, good morning, everybody. Good morning, Minister. I'm Agnes Tuck. I'm from the Northern Cape, the region Springbok, and I'm from the ANC.
I'm Nick Koornhof, Western Cape ANC, but I'm only half a member here because I serve in trade and industry, and we're busy this morning with transfer pricing. I must say the house is buzzing underneath us, but it's good to be here. I think trade in science and technology is very important for the country.
Good morning, Minister. Good morning, DG. My name is Juanita Tarblanche. My constituency is Potchefstroom and Ventersdorp. Hence, I need to state again that because my part of my constituency is Ventersdorp, my surname is Tarblanche. And not Tyler Blanche, and I come from the DA. Thank you very much. I can assure you that no dreams are shared.
Good morning, I'm Annelie Lotrich from the Free State representing the DA.
If I could just make a few remarks, because this is the first opportunity I've had to attend the Portfolio Committee meetings. It seems my diary and Parliament's diary of committee meetings don't work very well. In fact, today I sent apologies to the President, because we do have Cabinet committees and Cabinet on Wednesdays, and hence it's always difficult, but I'm really glad that I've had the opportunity to be here with our DG, the DDGs, and other senior officials of the department. The DG is going to make the presentation on our behalf, Chairperson. The presentation comes out of a rigorous planning process in which full attention has been given to ensuring that our department supports and coordinates the national system of innovation to ensure that it is robust and responsive to the knowledge generation ambitions of South Africa, and that it plays an active role in realizing the development goals of our country, as well as, of course, the African continent and the global community, given the international character of science. As a department, we're making strenuous efforts to ensure we are appropriately focused, that we are strategic and fully responsive to the human capital development goals of South Africa, as well as to the strategic goals of a strong national system of innovation. We believe that financial resources are a constraint that government should assist us to address, but we are fully cognizant of the difficulties confronting our economy at present, and do believe that the government of President Zuma has provided support to our department and its ambitious goals, which will be elaborated by the DG in the presentation we make today. So while we are concerned about the level of resources we receive, we believe we do enjoy government support, and that there are interventions of a strategic nature that will support the system and advance the achievement of the development imperatives of South Africa, as well as our partners in the continent and the global community. I hope the Portfolio Committee will find our presentation and our ambitious goals and objectives as exciting as we find them. And I now hand over to the Director General.
Thanks very much, Minister, and thanks very much, Chair, Honourable Members. We this time did not land the presentation with the presentations that we have given you before. So we will highlight some of the work, but not for the sake of demonstrating where I think the thinking is going forward in the next 5 years. We do have new vision and mission, so that's probably going to be new. But we also looked at the National Development Plan and as a framing document to guide our strategic plan. So we'll share with the Honourable Member some of the work and the words that we have extracted and how we've interpreted the NDP. Of course, we also want to remind everyone that we do think that science, technology and innovation can contribute to the eradication of inequality, unemployment and poverty. We will share with the Portfolio Committee emerging thinking around how we think we can contribute directly and indirectly to these. And then we've done an analysis of what we have been doing in the last 3-4 years, and we'll share this with the Portfolio Committee and begin to indicate how we think on the basis of that analysis, what we need to do going forward on both the knowledge generation and exploitation. And then we will share with the Portfolio Committee strategic outcome-oriented goals that we have set ourselves for the next 5 years. We'll say a few words about financing, and then we will conclude. And then the presentation has a lot of case studies that we've included at the end, but the idea is not to really speak to those. It's for the Portfolio Committee to strengthen some of the issues that we will have raised. So this is a vision that we have adopted now: increase well-being and prosperity through science, technology and innovation. Relatively short, hopefully easy to remember vision, and hopefully it's a stretching vision. Of course, to achieve the vision, we hope to have a mission where we provide leadership, an enabling environment and resources for science, technology and innovation in support of South Africa's development. So let's then extract some text that comes from the NDP as a framing for how this has shaped our thinking. The NDP, in one of the chapters, acknowledges that economic development is a long-term project and that they propose that innovation should grow importance over time. And they have identified 3 phases in which perhaps we should consider our work in the next couple of years. The first phase, which is this phase up to 2017, they propose that the focus should be on intensifying research and development spending, emphasizing opportunities that are linked to existing industries, be it agriculture, mining, and others. In the second phase, between 2018 and 2023, they suggest that the country should lay the foundations for more intensive improvements in productivity, where innovation across the state, business and social sectors should start to become pervasive. This is in line with some of the comments that the Chair has made during his opening remarks, and therefore we'll be looking at how science and technology innovation increase productivity in firms. We'll also be looking at working close with other government departments, the private sector and other sectors of the society to ensure that innovation is embraced along the lines that the Chair has indicated. And then in the third phase, the emphasis should be consolidating the gains on the second phase with greater emphasis on innovation, improved productivity, more in intensive pursuit of a knowledge economy and better exploitation of competitive advantages in an integrated continent. So these are the words as extracted from the NDP. What we've done is we've tried to say, what does this mean for us as we go forward? So the first one is we would like to draw on the progress that we've achieved this far in the national system of innovation. We would like to expand the research capacity, human capacity, and institution building. There are examples that we need to be thinking around
the appropriate institutions to drive this vision that we'd like to achieve. We'd like to build on the lessons that we have learned. We have started, as you know, setting up the offices of technology transfer and the National Intellectual Property Management Office to commercialize ideas from research. This is a new game for us in town, so we are happy to be working with the role players in the system to make this better. We would like to deepen our support to existing sectors in agriculture, forestry, agro-processing, aquaculture, manufacturing, and mining. And we will share with the portfolio committee the work that we're doing, led by Program 5, using sector innovation funds to support existing sectors and emerging sectors in other areas of the green economy, hydrogen and fuel cells, new pharmaceutical ingredients through technology innovation. So this is in line with the first phase articulated in the NDP. In the second phase, we would like to accelerate the transformation of the sector, or to continue and to deepen, where we would look at how we ensure that there is demographic representativity, enhance efficiency in the economy through knowledge, and the government will continue to increase, hopefully, R&D investment and commercialization, as I have indicated, because to do this, we have discovered that we have to partner with other governments, especially the commercialization aspect in the downstream side, where huge funds are required, and then optimize utilization of inbound technology. And then the third phase, we would like to increase the number of knowledge workers, people with master's and PhD, boost exports that are local, and then, of course, ensure that the commercialization of indigenous technologies and local technologies is enhanced. We don't see these phases as distinct phases. We see some of the things that will be required in phase 3. We would like to start some of them now, and some of the things in phase 2 will be in phase 1. So this would be, if you like, in concert. We've tried to make an attempt of looking at our work and how we can contribute to inequality, poverty, and unemployment. We would like to indicate that this is the early start of doing this work, extracting from what we do. We will continue to deepen our thinking, refine the data that we're collecting, but at the early stages, if I start with unemployment on the extreme right, we do have internships that you are familiar with. We have researchers that are, of course, employed. We have postdoctoral support. We also think that economic growth helps in unemployment. We hope to help grow companies' turnover, reduce technology balance of payment, and the current account deficit, support small medium enterprises through technology localization and station program, grow local industries through technology in our emerging industries action plan. So these are economic activities that we hope, if they are supported, they will create more employment. I'm coming back to that later. I'll come back to the technology balance of payment later on, because we're going to spend a bit more time explaining what we mean by that. We're also, of course, looking at how we can increase exports on some of the initiatives, such as the Hydrogen South Africa Initiative, and I'm familiar that the Portfolio Committee had the opportunity to visit the center at University of the Western Cape. The Fluorochemical Expansion Initiative, we are now refining this work to direct at some of the areas of potential export and industrialization in South Africa, and the titanium beneficiation work that, again, we've introduced in this, an advanced manufacturing technology strategy. So all of these initiatives, we think, if they are properly absorbed by industry, they will help in the unemployment. On the poverty, you are aware that we have pilots in three community-based areas of agro-processing, traditional medicine, cosmeceutical, and nutraceuticals. And we hope that by ensuring that these IKS-based pilot community-based initiatives will help in alleviating poverty. So again, I think the second one repeats the same thing. Apologies for that. On the inequality, we hope that we have to continue to transform the scientific workforce in terms of race and gender, and hopefully, again, people who have degrees, they find it easier to find work, and hopefully that will also make sure that we bridge the inequality. And then, of course, we have a number of innovations to enhance standard of living. in partnership with a number of departments. You are aware of the work that we are doing with the Department of Basic Education in Kofimvaba, where we're providing not only the ICT-based tools for enhancing the learning, but also providing alternative technologies to make the conditions of children in this area much, much better. We are, of course, also working with philanthropic organizations such as Bill and Melinda Gates to look at alternative sanitation technologies and off-grid technology solutions in rural and peri-urban areas. So we hope that this directly could contribute to inequality. Indirectly, we have under unemployment a number of SACHI South African Research Chairs initiatives or chairs that could provide policy guidance on how we can deal with unemployment. Of course, there are employment opportunities from some of the initiatives, such as the rollout of the Meerkat in Carnarvon in the Eastern Cape, where we do employ a number of people locally in the area. On poverty, we would like, of course, to target postgraduate bursaries for black and women as part of ensuring that the people, hopefully, who are having degrees have better opportunities not to be poor. And then, again, there are specific research chairs that would help us on providing policy on how to deal with challenges such as food security. And then, of course, ensuring that this information is packaged to enhance decision-making. And inequality, again, the postgraduate bursaries and the use of technology to improve. So as I said, this is early work that will be developed over a period of time so we can collect the data on this and see what we are doing directly and indirectly. So we've done a little bit of analyzing the situation in terms of where we come from, and I'd just like to start by saying that it is now internationally recognized that science, technology and innovation plays important role in socio-economic development, as the chair says. FDIs are seen as a source of new and sustainable growth and competitiveness, an engine for addressing social challenges, and it holds the key to job creation and enhanced productivity. In fact, from the report that we have seen from the OECD, it sees innovation as central in lifting economies out of a global economic crisis. And in fact, in 2008, we did a little bit of analysis. There were a number of countries that at the time when there was a global economic downturn, we saw increased investment in science, technology and innovation. The countries that come to mind was our partner in the EU, where they have voted approximately 80 to 90 billion euros towards innovation at the time when the crisis in Europe was deepening, because they see the role of innovation going forward. In the First World War, we saw Finland doing the same thing, where at the time after the war, they increased the investment in science and technology and innovation, and after the Second World War, we have seen Japan doing the same thing, and all of these economies, we all know what has happened after those investments were made. So the second analysis on the knowledge generation is that there are indications that the publications and students are increasing as a result of some of the initiatives that the department has been driving, and these include the research chairs, bursary values, and centers of excellence. We think we do have a productive and an efficient researcher community, even though it's small, and we would like to say, how do we expand this productive and researcher community? We are worried about established researchers that are very, very small, extremely productive, and are aging. And how do we then build the next generation of researchers to ensure that this community is expanded? And later on, I'll ask Thomas to expand on some of the thinking and the collaborative work that we're doing with the Department of Higher Education. We sometimes have lack of required critical mass for social and economic transformation. So we do sometimes need large-scale focused initiatives that are bigger than just small initiatives that we've been piloting over a period of time. To continue then on the knowledge generation, as a way forward, we think then we need to deepen and scale up implementation of successful programs such as centers of excellence and research chairs. And at the moment, I think we've added 3 new centers, if I remember, Thomas, and taking the total to approximately 17, if I'm not correct, one on food security, one on human settlements, and the other one on cytometrics, and possibly one on HIV and AIDS. So I think we are expanding this, but maybe we can do more. We need to mobilize resources for infrastructure. This still remains an area where we still feel that the system is completely under-resourced. But of course, as a mitigating strategy, whilst we are trying to get to the infrastructure that we need, we are looking at how we can provide access to international infrastructure. And our colleagues at ICR have really been extremely good in looking for countries and places where we can really use infrastructure that we may not have. Strengthen efforts to grow the next generation, as I've said. Implement revised strategies to build the pipeline for research and innovation. It's fine for us to fund honors, masters, and PhD, but we need to be thinking around how do we build the pipeline and what strategies we need to develop in partnership with, say, the Department of Higher Education and Basic Education. And then new arrangements for scale-up research efforts are required. We just use this diagram to say our knowledge exploitation. We've categorized it into these four areas. The first one is to use science and technology to build new industries where we can. Strengthen the competitiveness of existing industry, that's extremely important, mining and agriculture in particular. See whether we can support local localization opportunities, in particular in the small medium enterprises. And then, of course, we'd like to support social outcomes such as education, health, and rural development. We will use this framework in then talking about the knowledge exploitation as we go forward. So please keep it at the back of our mind. So on the knowledge exploitation, we want to substantially strengthen the knowledge exploitation architecture. As I've said in my opening remarks, we have an IPR Act that is beginning to be accepted and being an instrument that help us to strengthen the management of intellectual property across the system. You do know that it proposed the setting up of the offices of technology transfer. We hear that these technology transfer are beginning to increase the inventions disclosures as a result of this framework. We are happy with the new direction that the Technology Innovation Agency is taking, and we're working with them in ensuring that they work with the offices of technology transfer to take these ideas up to near commercialization. And then, of course, the National Intellectual Property Management Office to do both the advocacy work as well as ensuring that the legislative environment under the intellectual property management is adhered to. We have a number of important large-scale pilot and demonstrator initiatives that we think needs to be moved into the next phase of our work, and we'll give examples of some of them here, and we'll give examples later on how we think they can help the broader challenges that the country has. We think we have built a reputation as a strategic and credible economic partner with industry, with the IDC and the DTI, and in fact, we are happy to report that Program 5 has led the discussion with the Department of Trade and Industry to ensure that in the Industrial Policy Action Plan, you will now find a chapter that talks about research and innovation, and therefore we will report on our work on supporting the diversification of the economy and the reindustrialization in that part of the work. We have generated significant learning on R&D-led industrial development and science and technology for social impact. And however, we are of the opinion that we have not always packaged our work efficiently. So we sometimes are the only ones, and this is what the minister keeps saying, who know what we do. And therefore, we all need to be advocates of what we do and what it could do to change South Africa. So this is one of the areas in the next couple of years that we'll be focusing attention on, and Thomas has started to develop a public engagement strategy on how we're going to do this better going forward. So we want to build and learn from experience on how to commercialize ideas from research and development. We'd like to introduce this Emerging Industries Action Plan to consolidate the efforts of building new industries. We want stronger partnership with industry and other government departments, especially in supporting existing industrial sectors such as agriculture, mining, and forestry. And then we would like to have targeted innovation support for key social impact outcomes such as education and health. And then we are also using this lesson that we have learned in this area to develop an innovation for inclusive development strategy for the entire system using the lessons that we have learned. On the international partnership, we would like to continue to secure international and national SDI funds in support of the NSI. What we have picked up is that most of our bilateral engagements have been on the science side and very little on the technology and on the innovation side. So Dan Tutua, the DDG in this area, has committed to think around how we can strengthen our bilateral agreements on the technology and on the innovation side. How can we use science diplomacy to represent our interests in the rest of the continent, and SADC, and the rest of the world, and then to support SDI capacity in the rest of the African continent. We have developed a new Africa engagement strategy, and at an appropriate time would be happy to come and share that with this committee, which has two components, a developmental component, and then a component that looks at how we can jointly exploit competencies that we might have with the partners in the rest of the continent. And then, of course, we would like to increase our participation in international human capital development opportunities. One of the limitations that we think we have in the system is that even if we had huge ambitions of increasing our MSc and PhD numbers, we will reach a limitation because the size of the system is small. So we need to be thinking around how are we going to then tap into the relationships that we have so we can send some students abroad so that we can expand the capacity that we need. This policy package we have shared with the portfolio committee, but just to remind you that there are three policy documents that guide the work of the Department of Science and Technology, starting with the Science and Technology White Paper, which developed this concept of a national system of innovation. We continue to build it. We continue to make sure that all elements of the NSI work in tandem and in harmony. The 2002 cabinet approved strategy that identifies science missions and technology missions, and then the strategic management model which was introduced in 2004. We are looking at the strategic management model. We think it's not working as well as it ought to. This will include some of the issues that you've raised, Chairperson. How do we make sure that the work of the department finds its uptake in other government departments? Can you do that if you don't have a legislative mandate that allow you to do that? And therefore, again, we are working with the minister, the deputy minister, on what is the best model that we need to be proposing for the governance of the national system of innovation. We developed the 10-year innovation plan in 2007 and 2008, where we were really trying to see how can we deepen ensuring that knowledge permeates through a number of sectors, and we have a couple of lessons that we have learned from this plan. And then, of course, recently the setting up of the new agencies, TN Space Agency and the IPRX. So this is the package that guides the work that we do in the department. So when we developed the strategic plan, we then said we need to have some indicators of the things that we're proposing to do. So the first sort of goal is to build on previous gains in building a responsive, coordinated, and an efficient national system of innovation. This is one of the things that we would like to do going forward. And as a starting point, the minister has requested the National Advisory Council on Innovation to develop a decadal plan for science, technology, and innovation. We hope that this document will be developed in the next couple of years, and it will be approved by Cabinet by 2019. It could be earlier than that, but we thought if you want to consult with all the stakeholders within government, within the private sector, within the science system, it's a process that may take some time. So we've given ourselves perhaps a longer deadline, but we do know that we could achieve this perhaps before that. Budget coordination and legislative instruments, Chair, that you talked about, as you can see, we had this before your comments, so this is something we're thinking about. On the budget coordination, we started to engage with our colleagues in Treasury. We had a meeting a week ago where they are looking at the proposal that we're making to say at least how can you make sure that the funding for science councils that do not report to the Minister of Science and Technology is adequate, even though their mandates in terms of the responsiveness of the research that they do is determined by the line department, but the resourcing and the performance of the science part, there's a mechanism that from the science side we are able to ensure that there's that budget coordination. And as we have said, we are looking at a legislative instrument for coordination. We have started some work at looking at various countries that have done this very, very well, and there appear to be two models that come to mind. One is an act which is called an SCI Act, and then the issues of coordination and science and technology working with other governments is codified in an act. And then others, they tend to have in the Prime Minister's office or in the President's office the functions of science and technology. So we're looking at the environment, the political environment, and the development of those countries as to which of these two models we need to be thinking about. We may be thinking of a hybrid model in South Africa. And then we'd like to have improved systems in place by 2019 for a more rational and strategic deployment of public funds, SGR. So this is also linked to the budget coordination. And then by 2019, we hope to have a 300% increase in the rand value of investment by government and the private sector in research and development and partnership as compared to the 2013 figures. We've started to do a little bit of analysis on how we can do this. For instance, on the public side, we have discovered that in other parts of the world, provinces earmark some money for science and technology and innovation. And we'd like to see whether some of those models can be introduced in South Africa, where we'll have some provinces investing in science and technology initiatives that help the provinces for their own economic growth. And then we've also discovered that in some of the countries we actually have municipalities investing in science and technology that can enhance service delivery. So we'll be looking at whether in South Africa we cannot think of how we can use those spheres of government as well as sources of funding in order to get to the 1.5% target that we've all agreed to. So that's the first set of things. The second one is to maintain and increase the relative contribution of South Africa's researchers to global scientific output. So this is just really to increase our knowledge production, and these are the numbers that we have set out for ourselves. They are based really on the funding that we have received. So here, whilst I think we are stretching ourselves in terms of the numbers, the reality here is that we would not want to put numbers that would be beyond what we have now on the basis of the MTF allocation. For both these slides and this slide that talks about the number of graduates and representativity, even though we've given these numbers, I realized when I was just going through the presentation this morning that we haven't given you the baseline, so you are not able to get a sense of what is the relative increase. If the chair would allow me to pause a little bit and ask Dr. Thomas Afterheide, who is familiar with the nitty-gritties of these numbers, to share with us what are these numbers in relation to 2013 numbers, so we can have a relative sense of the numbers. So with your permission, Chair, could I then ask? He was warned, so I'm not catching him cold.
DG, Minister, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. On this slide here, for example, the 70,000 postgraduate students supported by 2019, this should be seen against the baseline in 2013-14 of 9,771. The 4,200 graduates and students placed in science, engineering, technology, and innovation institutions as interns in the 2013-14 year, the baseline was just over 1,010 by comparison to 4,200 there, and the 5.5 million people reached through science and engagement activities by 2019, that should be compared to just over 1 million in 2013-14. The baselines for the rest of the data here, as well as some of the other slides that the DG will be presenting, are captured in the strategic plan in the section on program 4. All the baselines are there as well. But you'll see that these are all fairly significant increases that we are projecting, taking into account the caution by the DG that we need to be realistic about the extent of financial commitments that have already been indicated by Treasury.
Thanks very much, Chair Thomas.
Scientists are rarely realistic. By nature of their activity, they're ambitious. Hence, we do want to be wary about being too realistic, because that can hold you back. We do have ambitions, and we want to really strive to reach them while being realistic.
It's so nice to come from a politician. She's a scientist too. You can see that she's very honest. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. So the fourth strategic goal, the first one being the coordination of the NSI, and the other one being the knowledge generation, and the third one being the expanding the student, is to derive a greater share of economic growth from R&D-based opportunities and partnerships. So what we'd like to do is to, by 2019, to have industrial financing secured of the order of $2 billion on the portfolio of these R&D-led industrial development initiatives that are funded by the DST. The reason why we're calling this a proxy indicator is that we think that if we can secure the $2 billion, these initiatives will really get into the full commercial space, and then we'll be able to generate the revenue that the country would need. So this is not necessarily funding from us, but it's funding that will secure in partnership with the IDC, for instance, and other government departments. By 2019, additional revenue of $500 million we are anticipating, generated from firms and companies that are or have received support from DST. So this is the performance of the companies that are receiving funds. Of course, again, these are numbers that we've done at the back of the envelope calculation. We have to engage with the companies, we have to collect this data, and being able to come back to you maybe halfway through the strategy plan with a better sense of what this number is likely to be in much more detail. But again, we are using this to say we are developing indicators where we want to know what the impact is of the work that we are doing out there in the industry. And then by 2019, we hope to have 10,000 small medium enterprises and performance that will be improved through science and technology and innovation. And then on the acceleration of the inclusive development through scientific knowledge, evidence and appropriate technology, we hope by 2019 to have decision support provided that strengthens or improves the delivery of at least 10 government services and functions. Just to give you an example of the work that we do in this case, maybe I should stop because I think we've got pictures that show some of the work that we're doing in this case. Second proxy indicators is that between 14 and 19, the contribution of technology-based opportunities for local economic development will be introduced or strengthened in at least 5 distressed municipalities. Again, we'll show you an example of the work that we're doing and how we would like to expand this work in this area. And then by 2019, opportunities for improving the standard of living of at least 500,000 people in South Africa or 12 communities unlocked through science technology interventions that are funded by the DST. So now what I'd like to do, I'm going back to the slide of increasing the number of high-level graduates. You've seen these numbers. I just wanted to bring it back because we want to expand a little bit on what we're going to do here. And this slide is explaining this in much more detail. So what we hope to do is to design and implement a system to track graduates. This is a worrying issue for us, and this portfolio committee has raised this. We need to know what happens to these students when they are trained. Do they go and work in the area where they are trained? Are we having, at the moment, there's a lot about unemployed graduates, and we don't have the data know, a database that can say to us that's true or not true. So we started this work working with the National Research Foundation, and of course hopefully we'll get the support of the students that are supported by government so they can tell us where they are, what they do over a period of time. We would like to expand the internship program. We believe this is a successful program and we would like to expand it. We would like to mobilize more funding for researchers and students as part of growing the research capacity. And then, of course, we want to ensure equity and transformation of the HCT bursaries, their beneficiaries for black women and disabled. And then, of course, we want to, as I had indicated, that we had not packaged our work effectively before. How do we deepen our science engagement so that the public is mobilized around having the same interest and excitement as all of us who work in the system. So this was just to say in detail some of the initiatives that we're going to drive in the next 5 years. Again, I'm not so sure, Dr. Thomas, after that, whether you want to talk about the collaboration on the emerging researcher that we are having with the Department of Higher Education and Training at this point. Again, if the chair would allow, would be happy to just give 2 minute update.
Thank you, DG. Honourable members, the department, we have been supporting so-called emerging researchers. These are individuals that generally already have a PhD, are placed in the universities largely, but to some extent in the science councils, mainly in the universities, and we have had a number of programs to support them. One specific one is called the Research Career Advancement Fellowship, which the National Research Foundation established fairly recently. In terms of this program, we were supporting also the salary costs of some of these researchers, even though they're placed at universities, and ideally one would want the university to be picking up the salary costs because they're effectively staff members of the universities. But for a range of reasons, the universities have been unable to do this, and so we established this program through the National Research Foundation. But most recently, the Department of Higher Education and Training has begun implementing a fantastic new program where they are planning to establish 240 new positions each year over 4 years, I think it is, to essentially begin renewing the academic cohort in the universities at that level of the emerging researchers. And so we have now, in consultation with the Department of Higher Education and Training, agreed that we would no longer continue with this program. We would begin to phase it out and use the funds for that program to support the research costs of these new staff members that are being implemented through the DHET program. So that we're aligning our investment more with the core focus of the department in supporting research activities and the research costs, while the Department of Higher Education and Training is picking up the operational costs of employing researchers and academics in the university. So this is an example of the kind of interface that we have with the Department of Higher Education and Training that leads to significant increases in the efficiency of our respective investments. There were other examples I could mention, but I won't do so now. It's just one recent and good example. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. So again, I'm putting this slide to remind us that the other strategic outcome-oriented goal was to derive a greater share of economic growth from R&D-based opportunities. So how are we going to measure ourselves on this? So we've started to do some work. It's very early work that we're doing. Where at the top, we would like to make an impact on the economic front. And at the moment, we think we can make an impact on the GDP. We think we can make an impact on the current account deficit. I will explain this now. And then on the broad economic competitiveness. So what would be the inputs of that? That's what's shown below as outcomes. We would like to track the revenues from licensed technologies that are commercialized. So if you develop a technology, and because you cannot have a spin-out company and you ask somebody to develop a product on your behalf, how much revenue are they generating, or how much revenue comes back to South Africa as a result of that? The number of spin-out companies from commercialized ideas, will be tracking that, how many of them we're getting. leave the TPP for now, and then increase turnover of companies. We've already talked about, we'd like to work with companies to say, you receive funding from technology, Department of Science and Technology, or you work with one of our institutions, what has the intervention done in increasing your turnover? And then improve productivity in small, medium enterprises. A lot of them receive support through the Technology Stations program, and would like to know what has the support that you have received done to your bottom line. So this is just a framework which we are developing, as you can see, to have to be negotiated with others. And then we have a proxy indicators which we've just shared with you below, so we hope they will be an input into getting us onto the higher level impact that we'd like to do. The rest is just the initiatives that we have within the national system of innovation. But I have agreed that I will spend some time on the current account deficit. We've looked at these numbers which we receive from the Reserve Bank. Essentially, it's below zero because it's a deficit. So you can see that we are hovering somewhere between 4% and 6% of GDP. That translates in a year to about 200 billion rands in South Africa. Now, again, because most of us have current accounts, it means that every year we need somebody to finance 200 billion rands of economic activity in South Africa. Again, this is not the kind of situation even when you have your account, if your salary doesn't cover your cost and you have to rely on the bank manager every time to make sure every month your books are balanced. It's not the kind of state that you'd like to be in. So 200 billion is the number then. So what we've done is we've unpacked this, and we have looked at what we call disembodied technologies. So maybe let me start with embodied technologies and come back to the other. Embodied technology is a technology that is in a product, so you don't see it with your eyes. So a gadget like a computer, it's based on a technology, but it's a product that we sell. The phone is an embodied technology. The technology is inside the phone, so it's a product that you see. Disembodied technology is when you go to Sasol and you see a plant that has been bought by Sasol for them to take the feed stock to produce fuel from coal. So it's the hardware that they then have to buy in order for them. So that's the difference between the two. So these numbers then are saying that the technology balance of payment, in other words, the amount of money that we pay for others to give us the technology as a total current account that you saw of 200 billion, approximately 10% of that is made up of the money that we use to go and buy technology from other people. As a percentage of GDP, this has increased from 0.3 in 2003 to approximately 0.5 in 2012. So what it means is that we continue to rely on others to produce technology for us to do the things that we want to do. And again, perhaps it's the trend that we should be worried about, and then we'll come back to a little bit of further analysis that we've done. On embodied technology, again, which is the high technology manufacturing goods, it stood at 3.4% of GDP. So if you include 3.4 and 0.5, about 4% of the current account deficit is a technology component, or as a percentage of GDP. This slide shows the blue light is that is the payments that we have to make for the technology, and the red line is the receipts. In other words, it's money that we receive when we sell technology to others. So again, the moral of the story here is that we need to find a way of reducing the gap between the blue line and the red line. This slide shows, of course, that it's not as bad as we think, because we are exporting some of the technology, so it's not that bad. And this was, of course, an eye-opener for us as well, to say we shouldn't really bash ourselves too much. So whilst we are worried about this, there are increasing technology exports, and we use this graph to try and understand where these increases are coming from. So let me spend some time on it. The blue graph, or the blue bars, are the mining. So what it means is that in the mining area, we have a positive balance of payment. And in trying to understand where this comes from, I've been informed that We export a lot of mining equipment from South Africa to the rest of the continent and the rest of the world because of our knowledge and our expertise in deep mining. So maybe we should be saying, how can we support the sector? Can we see an even bigger increase in the export of this mining equipment? And if so, and I am aware that the Department of Trade and Industry is looking at capital goods as one of the sectors or the subsectors that need to be targeted for expansion. And what then it means for us in the sector is what is the research and development that we can do with the private sector to increase this. The second area where we seem to be doing well is a very small green set of graphs, which is on the agriculture. So in other words, on the agriculture, we seem to have a positive balance of payment. And we suspect, I'm sorry, Chair, that this has something to do with wine. That we are really and of course some fruit and a little bit of juices that we are expanding. So in the agriculture we have a positive balance of payment. So again the question is, can we work with the wine industry to expand the even more exports of the wine, and what research and technology can assist in this area? Of course, not only on the wine, but what other sectors in agriculture we can support so that that becomes a positive balance. And then, of course, the worrying one is the one at the bottom, which is the manufacturing. So our manufactured goods, we import in more than we export. That's essentially what it does. And therefore, the negative balance of payment on the technology component is made on the fact that on our manufacturing, we are not doing so well in final goods that are manufactured in South Africa that we export to the rest of the world. And then this is a graph that shows that we have certain sectors that have contributed to the manufacturing trade deficit. And the sectors where the rate of trade deficit has been growing are electronics. So again, we are importing more electronics and white goods. Pharmaceuticals, we are importing a lot more pharmaceuticals. Scientific instruments, office, accounting and computing, as well as aerospace. So this is expanding. And again, we should be asking some questions. So we don't have answers. We're just saying this is an initial analysis. And what this analysis perhaps is saying to us is to say, what are the initiatives that we are having in the system? Are there things we can do to reverse this trend or to minimize it? And then we have this graph or this slide that we have put to say we have a bioeconomy strategy that we have developed. Is there a way in which some aspect of this bioeconomy can help us to reduce the or to increase the positive balance of payment in agriculture? And then is there anything it can do to assist us with the broader current account deficit in the... So we'll be interrogating our work in relation to this problem that we have identified in this area. Are there things we can do to then increase the GDP? In the aerospace, we'll be looking at some of the programs. In the manufacturing, we'll do the same thing, electronic sector, and then on the pharmaceutical. In fact, we have now just developed a concept paper where the minister would be engaging the NBI as an industry sector to speak with the pharmaceutical industry to say, what could we do together to reduce the import of pharmaceutical products in various aspects of this sector? So we'll start this conversation. Minister, you haven't seen this concept paper. We'll be discussing it with you on Friday on how we can really start maybe with one sector, work with them, and then see how this goes. We might be doing the same with the mining in the next 3 to 4 years. But of course, there are initiatives that we think we have embarked on that can contribute to export. You are familiar with this work, and its aim where we wanted to do the technology catch-up, which we think we have done. We now would like to expand our capability in South Africa, and as you know, we have some products that we are introducing into the marketplace. The fuel cell that I hope you saw at UWC with a 70% local content, can we then begin to export some of these? And we are thinking around how we can really work with partners. I'm told that in the last week, Didi Jimboneni had a very exciting interaction with the Limpopo government. They want to set up a special economic zone in Tubat, I think is the name of the place, for manufacturing of fuel cells in that area. So we're looking at how we can partner for both local uptake as well as for export. We've done a little bit of numbers here. I'm not, again, wanting to spend a bit more time, Chair, on the detail. We can come and share. These are the numbers of what we think we can export in this area, whether it's in the components like the membrane electrode assembly. We've done an estimate that we can generate approximately $1.2 billion per year in the export of these. In metal hydride, which is the storage component, we think we can generate $1.2 million per year on export, selling these to others. And surprise, surprise, on the fuel cell itself, $15 million US dollars per year on export of the fuel cell that you saw. So these are initiatives that can help us, maybe not directly on the areas where we have a current account deficit, but a different approach where we can offset the... This is another area where, again, we are in the early stages of trying to develop a titanium industry. As you can see at the moment, we're sitting at the bottom where we can only get about 1.45 US dollar per kilogram of titanium. But we want to go into the 40 US dollar in terms of the titanium powder, or even 150 US dollar to 20,000 US dollar in terms of final products. And here we have a two-pronged strategy where we are looking at the titanium powder production. And one of the things I've just said to Imran is that we haven't sold about the downstream products that are already being produced in a number of universities, and we are trying to, again, develop this concept even further in much more detail. We do support some of the sectors in the economy, and as I've said before, we have identified these sector innovation funds in these nine sectors, so it's very good that the WineTech, which is the wine consortium, is already being supported. So we strike a partnership with this industry consortium, the fruit produce exporters, the sugar, the paper manufacturing, citrus, and the mining and mineral institutions. So, again, we're happy to come and give you a detailed presentation on how much we've been able to leverage from the private sector and what is the research that we are doing with them in these areas, initially to have knowledge that helps them to deepen the capability, but we've asked them to give us the data on how our interventions are helping them to generate more revenue and more people to be employed. So this, again, is the amount of estimate of what this would contribute to GDP. We also support small, medium enterprises through this initiative, which I will not spend a lot of time. My sense is that Imran, this has been presented to this committee before, where we try and use science, as you can see, both people and sometimes equipment in supporting small, medium enterprises to acquire knowledge that help them either to get contracts within the state-owned enterprises or for them to begin to export. There's a case study at the end that shows one company called PowerTech, which was assisted with some knowledge, and it has been able to secure a contract in Eskom, and it's now exporting to Nigeria. So again, these are the areas that we have identified, either in the public procurement space or some subsector interventions, whether it's in the aerospace or in the foundry, that we have identified. We provide benchmarking on what these small and medium enterprises ought to do or what they need to have, thanks to UNIDO, who has provided us with the support. So this is a very good program that can really be of good support. I will not go through this, as I said, because just some of the highlights of the overall impacts of these. Again, you can see the IP that was created, the number of jobs that were created as part of the interventions of the department, also the productivity improvement, import substitution achieved. Again, this is early stage of beginning to develop this data for reporting, but we think this is one of the things that in terms of economic growth that we'll be talking about. We did talk about inclusive development. In the NDP, they've said if you want to have standard of living, there are elements that contribute to that, and again, they are shown here so that we don't look at the standard of living as just science and technology being the only one. So again, this is something we've extracted from the NDP. In the same way as we've done for economic development, we have developed what kind of impact do we want to achieve in this case, and we have developed a number of outcomes and outputs that we'll achieve. So the same framework I share without going into the detail. It's early work again, and we'll be developing indicators and data to report on these. So these are some of the examples of the work that the department has been doing for quite some time, whether it's using satellite imagery on the left-hand side in order to improve on settlements or to identify areas where settlements are coming up where they're not supposed to be. The initiative that we supported in partnership with the CSIR in Claymont, I always confuse it with on the Drug Bay. So you are familiar with this. This is decision support for improved service delivery. This is the work that we're doing either with the Department of Basic Education in the middle, which you know. We are looking at work that we're doing with the Department of Health and Basic Education on school health policy. We are doing work with municipalities for spatial temporal evidence for planning in that area, and then the extension recovery with DAF. So we have a suite of things in this area that we can really use as part of the bigger standard of living framework that the NDP has talked about. We have initiatives such as the drying of mango, which we are now refocusing in Koankoa, Honorable Matale, that's looking at really use this learning that we have led, working with the communities, and Imran can perhaps add, they have been told that this initiative and this support that the department has been providing has turned into economic opportunities and orders from a number of well-renowned supermarkets in Rwanda. Do you want to talk about this and the thinking around how we want to move from an initiative that is located in Koankoa and begin to roll it out in a number of areas? Maybe, Chair, if you don't mind, just a three-minute expansion time.
Thanks, Minister, Honourable Members, Chair. For a number of years, the DSTA was supporting a technology development intervention in Zanin. And the idea is essentially, and you'll see a lot more of this as government rolls out these agri-parks that we spoke about. So in some way, it has that approach of an agri-park, but a lot more technology focus, where we build in Zanin a technology center with scientists that can do testing the quality of juices that come out of it. But essentially the idea, and we work very closely with Cecil around this, is to look at what local resources exist and how technologies, all types of technologies, can assist, whether it's pressing, juicing, drying, testing this. And the initiative was called the Koankoa Demonstration Center, but because it's been a long time, it's no longer a demonstration center. It's now become a fully fledged, it's registered now as a formalized company. It's been established with its own board in very close partnership with the Limpopo Economic Development Agency leader. So the idea is eventually that these technology interventions, if you bring together and cluster around in a particular area a number of technologies that can unlock economic value with it. The interesting thing around this project is we've learned as well. Originally, the intention was to look at certain high-value products, say, around essential oils, but as you work closely with the communities, you identify the need to tap into existing networks. So there was a lot of mangoes as an example. Backyard farmers who had this. They just didn't have the technology to make an economic value out of it. So working very closely with the business development expert, we needed to think about a whole value chain approach around how to bring it. We're taking this forward now as an example because a lot of the backyard, people who have backyard agricultural produce, the quality is just not great. So there's high rejection rates. People like Fruit and Veg City don't want it. So now we're working with the Limpopo University to assist in providing, you know, better seedlings or improving the soil conditions through science and technology, etc. So this is called the kind of innovation for local economic development, where you look at local communities, work very closely with local resources, and then strategically look at a whole set of technologies, whether it's pressing, like I said, agricultural information, etc., to create, to ensure that these different interventions add up to something significant. We're doing a study with HSRC now, hopefully it will be done in the next 6-7 months, to unpack the actual economic impact of this intervention, because we have high level numbers about the amount of funding that has gone back to individual households as well. So I think there's a very strong element that technology used strategically, and it doesn't have to be all high tech, it's a combination of high tech, low tech, things that just don't exist, but strategically putting this forward into a community can create economic value, and we're starting to work very closely with other local economic development opportunities, whether it's on aquaculture, etc. So it's a model that is going to underpin the target of working with 5 distressed municipalities. And it's going to be linked up with the broader government effort to develop these agri-parks that are on the horizon. Thanks, Tichy.
Thanks, Imran. So in this approach... I thought that we were at the same level with Ndate Mathare. We're coming from poor provinces. But now I'm starting to respect him. I think he doesn't have question because he's better than me.
Sorry, Chair, to choose an example from that area, but we have example for all the members. In Gauteng, we can talk about some of the initiatives that we there. SKA in the Northern Cape, we've got something in Northwest. So. This graph is just to show that we are now working with other governments. If we want to expand the example of Nkowankowa, here it's, for instance, the work that is being done by rural development, as you can see. So we don't want to parachute an initiative in an area for local economic development unless we are partnering with others. As Mr. Patel says, in this development of agri-parks, we'll be looking at if we needed to expand some of these pilots that we've been doing, how can we expand them with the Department of Rural Development? So this graph just is an illustration of that. You have seen these initiatives. Again, we are not hoping to expand on them on the aquaculture and essential also. They are in the same category of how they need to be expanded, but within the framework of working with others as well.
If I could just speak to the previous slide, DG, on aquaculture. The honourable members will recall that at the beginning of the year in the State of the Nation address, the President announced 9 areas that are regarded as key strategic economic interventions, which if we invest properly, invest in properly would lead to greater job creation, target the reduction of inequality, and assist us in addressing the triple challenges that all of us refer to of employment, addressing inequality, and reversing and reducing and eradicating poverty. Now, what one identifies with the work of the Science and Technology Department is that because of the ambition, the foresight, they have been very active in a number of key sectors. The announcement by the President links very well with work that the Department has been doing for several years, both experimentally as well as to enhance innovation. Now, the reason I'm intervening is the trick that we need is this coordination that the DG referred to at the beginning. And I'm making the remark and intervention in order to seek the assistance of the Portfolio Committee in sitting with other portfolio committees on the 9 priorities and actually identify where are the synergies. And the role of the Portfolio Committee of Science and Technology would be to say from the briefings we've had, we're aware in aquaculture that this has been done, rural development is involved, But is DTI bringing resources, incentives? Is agriculture sufficiently invested? And how do we achieve the large impact that is necessary for South Africa in order to make this DST initiatives successful, not because of DST, but for the interest of South Africa? What is missing is that we do work with departments that are sector departments, but I think we're not getting that cohesive partnership that one needs to really get the big impact that the President is hoping for. And I think it's for Parliament to actually start saying, as portfolio committees, we receive the department-specific briefings, but we want to sit as chairs and assess, are we coordinating on those nine areas? How should we coordinate in order to achieve the impact that we want? And if Parliament doesn't do that, you're going to continue to have the silo approaches, and you as parliamentarians will be supporting that kind of mentality, whereas it is possible for you, where you are, to actually compel coordination by investigating it. So I think you can really assist in making some of these interventions and others of other departments a real response to the challenges of South Africa. But it depends on the kind of work you do. And so you've got to really insist on a much more coordinated collaboration among yourselves as committees, and insist that departments come to you with how they are going to collaborate to achieve these objectives the President has outlined. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Minister. This you've just seen. We also, of course, do the work where we derive, we help the country to save money. This is an example of amount of money that was saved from satellite imagery costs because we had a Sumbandila set. Again, I will not go through this slide in much more detail. We have some selected indicators of performance, which I will go through very quickly. They are in the plan. The performance indicator on our planning, both strategic plan, APP and ENE, the public entities annual report submitted to Parliament, the number of disclosures, as I indicated earlier on, we want to check how many of these disclosures are now coming from publicly funded, and we will check how many of them get commercialized. We want to have the number of policy directives that are developed by the DST and its entities, and then they are adopted by government, and then the number of knowledge products, whether it's patent publications in some of the key areas of our work, the number of trainees that are supported. We showed you some broader numbers, so this is just the APP targets, number of new technology products, processes and services that will be commercialized, bursaries, new technology commercialized, international funds that we are going to be in investing in research, in ACD programs, and then how many of those funds will we be attracting internationally, number of leadership positions occupied by South Africa in international STI governance structures. We think it's important for South Africans to participate. At the moment, I think we're within the academy where we have the president being a South African, ICSUIA, International Council for Science, and want to continue to make sure that we drive the global agenda of research. So we track this, the number of students accepted into international training programs, as we discussed earlier on, and the number of approved AU or SADC STI initiatives endorsed at AU and ministerial level supported. These are some of the initiatives. We have seconded somebody to the SADC office in order to deepen and strengthen the science and technology agenda within SADC, Annalyn Morgan. Number of research, innovation and STI ACD cooperation projects funded and supported in kind by DST and other partners. So this is having indicators on the work that we're doing with our partners in the rest of the continent. Graduate and students placed in DST funded work. Programs in STI institutions. We want to see how many of the institutions are absorbing our graduates and students, because we think we are happy to train them, but we are not seemingly wanting to absorb them. So average amount of bandwidth per Sundan side. This is the rollout of the Sundan initiatives. And then, of course, there's some biennial reports on the state of climate change. We would like to use science and technology to support the Department of Environmental Affairs when it provides the state of climate in South Africa. Infrastructure grants that are awarded, and then we also want to make sure that we continue to protect the Astronomy Reserve through the Astronomy Advantage Geographic Area Act. Knowledge products and innovation for inclusive development that we've just talked about, reports and policy briefings on innovation and system of innovation policy. This is just an internal process. And some of these new development indicators that we've talked about, which we say are highly under development. Support for increased localization and competitiveness. As I said, we are collecting data and we want to start reporting on these. And then one of the instruments that we want to improve is the turnaround time and providing pre-approval decisions on applications for the R&D tax incentives. I remember we briefed this committee. It's a very important instrument on attracting investment by the private sector, so we just want to track our ability to have a turnaround time on this area. High-level research graduates that are fully funded or co-funded in some of the key niche areas. We would like to see students and researchers in the areas that we have identified to support the economic growth and therefore want to track this. So this is just a slide that shows how our investments over time as a percentage of GDP has been growing. So even though, as you can see, we've had a little bit of blips here and there, the money is increasing, but of course as a percentage of GDP, this you know that we now have a leveling off for the last couple of years, and this is a worry, but we're working on it, and this is just to share with the committee the budget for the next 3 years, growing modestly between 7.5 and 7.6, and how it's split, and this is the split in terms of the agencies that report to the minister. This is the organogram which hasn't changed. And in conclusion, we would like to build and grow and strengthen a national system of innovation that we think is efficient, productive, and beginning to be responsive to the national priorities. We would like to engage public entities and universities to orient them on this new way of thinking about the intended outcome. So we're going to spend time visiting HISA. We're going to spend time next week. I'm visiting the University of Cape Town, sharing with the leadership there this thinking, and for them to say, this is what we think we can do, enhance efforts at transformation and building of a strong academy. Thomas has talked about how do we get more young, a generation of researchers into the system, women researchers, and then institutional plans to accommodate and support young researchers. We are worried about young researchers in the institutions. We don't know how much support the institutions, so we're going a little bit down to say to the institutions, what are you doing to make sure that this happens? We want to deepen implementation from lessons that we've learned from the past, whether it's pilot to semi-pilots to full plants, and then support government in areas requiring technology solutions. The minister has talked, for instance, about the 9 priorities, and therefore we have 5 specific things that we are supporting the departments that are leading those areas. We need to be the advocates of the work that we do, both within the department and, of course, we also want the institutions to go out there and inspire confidence and show that science and technology can help. And then we'd like to enhance planning analytical capability and the evaluation capacity. If the department is not able to monitor progress on what we're doing, we will not be able to get forward. So, Chair, I think that's it. And then, as I say, we have a series of slides that, in a sense, confirm some of the things that we've been talking about and the new approach to our work. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Minister. Thank you. I always marvel at this thing, though I'm not supposed to marvel at it, that every time we meet you, Minister, and the team, we always find new things that if we don't know about them as a portfolio committee, it means the communities and societies don't know about it. So there's a lot of work that is being done, but very few people know about it. So we always mark a lesson, but at the same time, there's something that needs to be done. But thank you, members. We are going to be engaging. But the other thing that is marvelous is that I'm not sure how many people have been to the Eastern Cape. If you drive between Eastern, between Butterworth and Aitukia, there's somebody who's built a stadium, a businessman who's built a stadium there. He has put a board, I don't know why he did it, but he put a board that says, Siyaqhuba Hulumente, meaning that we're continuing to do, irrespective of whatever. I think the department is doing exactly that. Irrespective of the MIEGA funding, you are forging ahead. They are not saying, because there's no money, let me fold my arms and wait until something. It will never come, but you are continuing. It's easier to have somebody who's already doing something. I think for the first time I've been in Parliament since 2009, and I've been listening to Sonas, but the first time this year when I listened to the Sona, there's more science and technology than before, which made me feel that even at the presidential office, they're starting to understand that this is a key development. So I want you to keep it up, and I'm hoping that we're going to continue that trend, and we're not going to disappoint the president. Minister, we will definitely, what you have mentioned, I don't think we need to discuss it. It's something that we've got to do. Make sure that there's integration between these departments, and make sure that we interrogate these other departments where there are certain things that are going on. And there seems to be no coordination, especially when it comes to financing these projects that are very good and that are helping the country. So we've got no option. Around Easter, I was asked by some of my relatives to look for a guest speaker for a young man who got a PhD from the deep rural area. I thought of the minister, but I knew she was very busy. I didn't think about you, DJ. I should have asked you to go and be a guest speaker there. Fortunately, he got a job in CSIR. He got a PhD from the deep rural areas, and now the parents wanted to show that even if you are coming from those poor areas, you can get a PhD, even if you are coming from nowhere. I think next time they ask me, I'll ask you, DJ, to go in there and do it. So, members, that is the presentation. We can engage the department on what they said to us. Okay, Annelie, Nika.
Thank you, Chair. Minister Ndiji, I think, first of all, I would like to congratulate you on what you have presented here today. I think it makes me quite excited the approach that you have now in terms of looking at where do we have the need, where can you really make the difference, because I think very often we tend to do science for the sake of science, and we work on projects that is someone's specific interest. So I'm really looking forward to see what you're going to do to improve the problems that we do have with manufacturing and that we don't rely so much on imports there. In this regard, you've also mentioned collaboration with the Department of Trade and Industry. Are you in any way also involved with the Department of Small Business Development? Because I'm thinking specifically of the project that you mentioned in Limpopo with mangoes, because that is typical where we can empower people within the rural communities to set up their own small businesses. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Anil. Thank you. Nick?
Thank you, Chairperson. Yesterday I spoke with a few bankers who's lending money so that we can grow more food, you know, in the Western Cape. But I said to them, you know, that people are very negative in South Africa now. And I said, you know, we put not enough energy to be positive. And it's hard to be, to you know, you must force yourself to be positive. It's like going on a diet or trying to be fit at my age. It's hard work. So, you know, I say we must spend more time in being positive, because there's so many positive things going in this country, and science and technology is one. So I just want to thank you for that, and maybe you need far more money, but we are in trouble with regard to finances, and maybe with your positiveness and sciences we can get out of that. Minister, I just want to ask, have you got finality now with regard to the what you will do and what the DTI will do? Because, you know, many times I stumble when we do oversight over entities in DTI, and then I really think this entity should belong to science and technology. And I think there are many facets in SABS that should be here. NAMESA, for instance, I think should be at science and technology. Maybe, you know, at SHIP should maybe move to science and technology. So I just want to know, is it an ongoing process with regard to other departments, and will we see some movement with regard to that? And then a final question. I don't see smartphones in the radar here. Maybe it is, I don't know. But, you know, if you see what smartphones is going to do and change the face of Africa, they say 300 million more smartphones in the next 10 years in Africa. Now, just imagine that. Imagine how it will change not only South Africa, but the world, and especially Africa. And that's an opportunity for us. So I just want to know, maybe is there some movement there?
Thank you, Nick. Just to add, I don't think we're only negative, Nick. We are angry. I don't know why are we such an angry nation, which we need to change from and be positive and stop being angry. Because maybe we need more psychiatrists and psychologists to help us and lower them. But we definitely agree with you that that needs to be done. Honorable Matale, you can talk about the mango and that if the kid is left behind.
No, thanks, Chair. Thanks, Minister and DG. No, the issue of Limpopo and the Mego, it has nothing to do with trying to put Limpopo to be somewhere else and then disadvantage other parts of the country. As indicated, that is just a pilot program. If it works well, it will obviously not necessarily be replicated in that same form, but it will have to spread throughout the country so that as a country we grow. We must commend the minister and the team led by the DG on what is being done and your new vision and mission, which is very simple. You know, because sometimes we tend to make it very difficult, but we write it on paper. When you go out to implement, it's you know, it's a mountain to climb, which we create ourselves. And I think this is it will make it very, 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 very easy. I don't necessarily have a question, Chair, but to comment on what. The approach that has been adopted, that the department must be encouraged to intensify their program in terms of what they've identified. Indeed, there's no reason why we don't become torchbearers around mining-related issues, given the resources at our disposal. If you look at platinum, we are leading the pack with over 80% deposit. Manganese is the same, and other related minerals. So the department and government must put more resources to assist these industries to grow quicker. When the DG was talking about agro-processing and the wine industry in particular, I said to Pandu, we mustn't be surprised why it is leading. Because if you look at the wine farms, they were not started today. You know, the people who were exposed to wine and other things arrived here in 1652. So you look at that time today, in fact, it's older than the mining. So hence, it has developed that far. But you can see that there's a problem because mining came to overtake it because not much was put in that field. And I think we should mustn't be apologetic in putting more resources there to grow it quicker to be at par there with mining, if not above that. Because this, if you look at the grapes are not only for wine. They are used for a variety of products, and the department should try to increase their input as far as this area is concerned. Of course, they will have to diversify to also cover other sectors outside the grape, which is a fruit used for that. The issue that the minister has raised about positioning ourselves as a committee to ensure that greater coordination is enforced, I think we have arrived at the same determination that science is key to our growth as a country. And I think if we can make sure that we contribute towards Parliament positioning itself to ensure that there is greater coordination around this initiative by science, it will help us as a country to grow our economy. Because without a different thinking, if we continue to think in silos, we won't go anywhere. We will come here year in, year out, complain about lack of coordination because science thinks this way. DTI think that science is coming to its space. Health also think differently. Agriculture have its own priorities. We'll just have a problem. But if we coordinate the little resources that we have, in agriculture, the resources for R&D, we also do the same thing. So if we combine them, we can do more and better and quicker because we'll have more than what each has. But there's a saying in one of the languages I speak, which says that if you want to scoop something, you use a finger to try and scoop, you'll come up with nothing. But if you combine all your fingers, you'll come up with something out of a pot. So I think that's how we should approach things as the committee and also from the side of government. But indeed, it's encouraging that we can do better to resolve our problem. When we are presenting about eradication, I say, it's a very good idea and a very good wish, but maybe we should not talk of eradicating, because it's a good thing, but will we ever reach a stage, given the nature of our societies organized, to completely eradicate poverty or unemployment? I don't know, but it's a subject for a debate. But it's a very good thing. The minister said, we must aim high, even if we don't achieve eradication, but we'll go closer towards it. Like I said, I don't have a question, but more a comment, and to commend the minister and the team that you are leading with the DG, that they are doing a very good job, and we must let you know that you are doing good. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zeta. I could see when you are talking about wine, Nick was smiling behind him. I don't know why. I don't have to ask a question. But I'll ask him outside why he was. I listened to a young lady in SAFM. She was being asked, there's a program in the afternoon that there was a question that was asked, what do you do about competition? She said, sometimes competing leads to other things and leads to hatred and anger and all that. But we should not compete, but we should see ourselves as compassionate. We should be compassionate and see how we can help each other rather than competing, because competition leads to other things. And I think that's very important, that we should look at how do we help each other. The cake is too big. We don't need to compete about the cake, but unfortunately we compete and that leads to anger, that leads to other things, consequences that are not very good. When you talk about interpretation, it's so interesting that Minister knows all the languages, and you should have allowed her to interpret. She would have interpreted it very well. You ask her to talk to Betty Costa. She knows all the languages. I don't know how she manages it. Maybe you'll tell us, how she manages to know all the languages. I'm not sure. I'm going to test her on Khoisan language. One day I'm going to test her on that one and see whether she knows that. I didn't see any hands. Tuk-tuk, I don't expect any question from you. So, Minister, will give over to you and DG to... Some of them were comments. But the main thing is the accolades that the department is doing well. And let's keep it up, and we're going to be your voices outside. Let's...
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'll answer one or two, and then DG will really go to the substance. I'd like to thank the honourable members for the positive comments. I'm sure the DG and the officials appreciate them sincerely, because it's not usual that we thank our public servants, many of whom work extremely hard to keep our country and government functioning. So we sincerely thank you on their behalf for those comments. I know that we have a really hard-working team, and I'm not always a nice person, but they are fantastic. And so I'm grateful that you are thanking them in this way. On the questions that have been posed with respect to Honourable Lottering, I agree with you. I think this issue of the balance of payments is an interesting one to target, and we need to look at what we can do in response to that. And we are really assiduously attending to the opportunities there, because we think it's a potential gateway, a breakthrough that we could make in a significant way. And one of the areas in which we see this possibility is with respect to the satellite development industry, where we think there's real opportunity, because we are purchasing a lot of data from international sources, rather than deriving our own and reducing then our balance of payments in that area. So it's one of those that we're keenly looking at. The Small Business Development Department has been an interesting arrival for us in the government department system. We realized early on that actually there are very important synergies between the work we do and what they have to initiate. So we invited Minister Zulu and a team of officials to just brief them on what we're doing in trying to encourage small business development, medium-sized companies, and so on. We had thought, her and I, that it would be 1 hour's meeting, and we ended up sitting for 4 hours because she was absolutely astounded at what we're doing and at the possibilities for collaboration that there are. So we are now working on a joint plan for ensuring that the two departments really exploit the strategic opportunities in a very careful and planned way. So we certainly are collaborating. I have been very, very concerned about the communication on science and technology and innovation in South Africa, and hence the renewal to our science engagement strategy. We will be alerting you to what we're trying to do, but it's certainly one of the areas in which I believe we need a lot of improvement. There's amazing stuff out here in South Africa, in our universities, in our various entities, and in our partnerships with the business sector, and we need to put it out there. We've asked our entities to also strengthen their communication strategies, and you'd have seen or heard at some of the work being done by the CSIR you know, it's another well-kept secret. And certainly I think the nation has been entranced by some of what has emerged from their new communication strategy. So we are working, Honorable Kuanov, on attention to the positive stories that we should be telling our country. On the DTI, we are working together much more than in the past, but I think we haven't done the kind of institutional assessment you've referred to, and I think we should. We should look at whether there are duplication of instruments or duplication of institutions, and look at where these would reside. I think in space science, there may be an area that we need to attend to. Recently, we were informed that DTI was withdrawing the TRIP fund from the administration by the National Research Foundation. Unfortunately, there wasn't proper communication with ourselves, so we don't know what the reasons are for this withdrawal, and we hope it will continue to be managed as excellently as the NRF managed it, but I'm not aware of what the plans are in this regard, and I found it a rather peculiar development given the lack of interaction between ourselves. But I do think we need to do more in this regard. I'd like to ask Imran to perhaps say a bit more about our work in the information communication technology sector, and particularly some of the developments with respect to support for startups and working with young people in the ICT domain. So he'll come back on that. My understanding from the remarks that Imran Patel made, our DTG, with respect to Ngowangowa, we now have a functioning business. It's no longer a startup, it's not a pilot anymore, it's moved. And I remember speaking to some of the women in Tzaneen, and they told me that they are the new thousand years, in the words of the former Deputy President Phumzile Mlambo Ngcuka, who said we shouldn't be aiming just to be millionaires. Start as thousand years, then it will come. So this woman used this expression in speaking to me about the work they're doing in Ngowangowa. And certainly these are pilots we should replicate. You know, we could do other things with mango in Natal. We could do something with pineapples in the Eastern Cape. So there are real opportunities. And Chairperson, we call traditional remedies indigenous knowledge. And we're doing a lot of exciting work with respect to that, and new developments with Moringa and other remedies that are not really yet out in the global space. So there are a lot of exciting developments that we hope we will see in the next few years. Perhaps I could just hand over to Imran to speak to the smartphones and the ICT work.
Thanks, Minister. In developing the ICT R&D and innovation roadmap, we came to the same conclusion that mobile technologies are a massive game changer, and we've been doing some very, very interesting work in that area, so it continues to be prioritized. To be practical, though, as an example, we have worked together with the Finnish government and the World Bank, as an example, to set up something called an M-Lab based in the Innovation Hub. I'm told, and we're busy doing an article around this to feature the 8 SMMEs that have emerged out of this, including one now where the technology is used for the scheduling of buses and transport, transport information, both in the Western Cape and now in Gauteng, etc. So the young company, 2 or 3 people, etc. And that's the power of technology. It's not only around creating companies around small and medium enterprises, but is how do we use smart phones as a tool to do other things. And as an example, one of the MLab projects was to look at an application on a mobile phone that allows people to collect data on river health. And now we're using this as an example where people go out and they test the river health and they send the information up to it. So we have quite a well-established, very detailed program, and in fact it's also a kind of a diamond that needs to be exposed. Some of our work in AMLAB. So we encourage the portfolio committee. When you next stand down, I know you were supposed to come down. I didn't think about it, but the AMLAB is just, in fact, you can walk to this and you can meet some of the entrepreneurs. We have a very big focus to target township developers, in a sense, African developers. So we have now outreach programs in Soweto, etc., where we bring people into what we call hackathons, give them a problem. And in fact, I'm not too sure if Minister was briefed this morning, but some of the team were very, very motivated by the Minister's presentation around us making a stand against xenophobia. So they went out and they're developing an app that we want to show tomorrow to the Minister, where people can register online as a petition, an online application of petition. So I tried to, with Isaac, test the team to say, can you do this in 48 hours? And they're saying they can. So I can't say it will happen. We're waiting to see tomorrow, which is the 48-hour thing. So the idea is that it has these immense possibilities, and in fact South Africa is a very strong country around mobile app development, around using cell phones, not only in government, but for example MTN, etc. The big cell phone operators have been world leading in terms of things like pay as you go, etc. So we have a very strong base, and that's why we work with people like Finland. So I would want to assure the member that it is on our horizon, and we can see the transformative power, and we encourage the portfolio committee to visit and interact with the MLAB colleagues when you do one of your oversight visits to Gauteng. Thanks.
This is not coming in. Oh, okay. Everything has been done. Members, you'll pardon me. When something is good, you don't even look at the time. Now the time is gone. Thank you very much, Minister and the Department. We have accepted your strategic plan. We are looking forward to passing the budget, which we still think that is not enough, especially that they are in a global field. But we'll see how we get on and see how we can do it. So thank you very much. We are very happy with your presentation. As you can see, we're supposed to be carrying a red pen and putting the X's and but it seems as if all the members are just not using a red pen. They are elated with what is happening in your department. So keep it up. Don't be arrogant. Remain humble and continue and work for the people. But let's make sure that what you are doing is known. Let's not be like a chicken which lays one egg and makes a lot of noise. And a fish will lay million eggs and it will just swim away, not being known that it has laid an egg. Let's be like the chicken which will lay one egg and makes that big noise. Maybe communication needs to come in and help us in this one. Thank you very much. It's unfortunate that Mr. Azar, you will have a few minutes because we've taken a lot of time. But you know you're a business person. You know how to put things, how to be innovative. We won't even have tea time, but if people want to move us, they can move us because we don't have the luxury of time. So we'll go straight to Naki. And if people want to have something, they can go out and have something and come back. So we won't have that luxury of tea. It's not always like this. Honorable Tak, but it's only that today that we're happy with the presentation. Thank you very much. Thomas, if you want to go, you can go. I see David doesn't want to leave. He's sitting there. He wants to say yes. We are ready. We are ready for you. We won't introduce ourselves. You're already here when we introduce ourselves. So we'll just give over to you.
I am here in my capacity as a member of the Council of the National Advisory Council for the Innovation, am here personally on account of the fact that the chairperson of the council, Professor Cheryl De La Rey, was unavailable. She asked me to convey her apologies. She is the Vice-Chancellor, as you know, of the University of Pretoria, and they have an important graduation ceremony today that she had to attend. I do have to apologize in advance in that I did have very little notice of this, so please forgive me if if there are some glitches in doing the presentation. But I have found it a very interesting morning just to be here. If I could just add a few words in my capacity as being a member of the private sector, running a small business, and listening to the presentation by the DST And I have to say that it was exceptionally encouraging, and I'd like to endorse the comments that were made by the honourable members, Lottering and Kurnoff, earlier, in congratulating the DST. What particularly impressed me as an economist was the reference to the balance of payments. I'm frequently asked to predict the value of the rand, and obviously one of the, and the more the rand falls, the more inflationary pressures there are. Yeah, theoretically, for a short while, we become more competitive. But at the heart of the problems facing the South African economy is the fact that we do have this massive 200 billion rand shortfall between what we pay out to foreign sources to get products and what we receive for producing things ourselves. I have a wonderful graph that I often show where I trace back manufacturing production against retail sales over the past decade and show how retail sales in South Africa have increased by 70% in volume terms and manufacturing production has increased by 10%. Now, there's only one way in which you can sustain such consumption, and that is to keep importing more and more, but you're going to run out of money doing so. And so what encouraged me enormously was to see the recognition on the part of DST of the of its role as trying to plug that gap by developing productivity and the capacity to actually enable the country to produce things itself, to become less reliant on foreign products. Anyway, that's so much enough as an economist. I do apologize. Some of the comments that I will make will convey my background as an economist. They will also tend to convey my background within NACI as being very much oriented towards the production of indicators to track the innovation space. But I am here primarily to present the NACI story to the Portfolio Committee on Science and Technology, and essentially you'll see from this slide that the critical role that NACI sees itself as playing is to provide advice to the Minister on issues relating to science and technology. The mandate is to advise the Minister through the Minister, the Minister's Committee and Cabinet on the role and contribution of science, maths, innovation and technology, including indigenous technologies. And quite a lot was made of that in the earlier discussion, in promoting and achieving national objectives. The terms of reference is to display an understanding of government's priorities and policies with relation to the national system of innovation, and that after consulting with the Minister to keep providing her with advice on priorities and the agenda. One of the factors that was so encouraging this morning was to hear from the Minister herself, but from the DG as well, of the recognition on the part of the DST and of the Portfolio Committee, by you Chairman as well, of the need to coordinate and interface with other departments and other portfolio committees. You will see from this structure of advice that NACI stands as an element of the Department of Science and Technology, but the information and advice that it provides actually covers a range of fields that actually fall also within the ambit of several other departments. And in fact, just looking at this and having heard this preceding discussion, I recognize that one could even add some others, such as agriculture and so on, to that framework. And Honorable Lottering, you will see the encouraging fact at the right of the right-hand side, the incorporation of the Department of Small Business Development, etc., as forming part of this. So, yes, NACI advises the Department of Science and Technology, but the hope is that that will permeate across many other departments as well. And when I come across and in terms of further discussion, you will see how it encroaches upon many of the other departments. From the bottom up side, you will also notice that you have information coming into the DSC from ASSEV, the Academy of Sciences, the National Research Foundation, National Science, the HSRC, the CSIR, and so on, feeding into the DSD. And from the top side, you have NACI as an external body, so to speak, providing expertise there. And it's not as if the NACI itself is isolated from everyone else. There are many other players in the innovation community, which you see here, individual experts, businesses, academics, NGOs, science councils, and other spheres of government and in the international community that are also relied upon to provide inputs into NACI. And we set up subcommittees at times, and we draw some of those experts in to assist us. The vision for NACI is to for a well-coordinated national system of innovation in which science, technology, and innovation are recognized as the primary drivers of economic and social development to enable the South African economy to participate in the global knowledge economy. That summarizes it. And the mission is to serve as the premier advisory body to the minister on and the government on SDI matters. Essentially, there is a staff of 13 in the secretariat that feeds into an executive committee, which in turn feeds into and does a lot of the research. Well, it's not that NACI necessarily does that much research itself. Its role is very much one of coordination, and then it provides and basically scans a lot of the research that has been done by other councils, coordinates that, puts it in, provides it to the council, who then decide on various priorities and specific projects that it undertakes and looks has oversight for before providing advice to the Minister of Science and the Cabinet through the Cabinet. It's got a long-term vision. The important thing too that has developed in recent times, of course, is that with the promulgation of the National Development Plan, NACI sees it's one of its principal objectives, the coordination of the national system of innovation with the NDP and to try and feed into the priorities set out by the NDP. And there are many aspects to this, and we've just illustrated here five particular outcomes of the NDP that NACI tries to provide advice to. Obviously, employment and inclusive growth to reduce poverty and inequality, protect and enhance the environmental assets and natural resources of the country, trying to develop rural communities. And one of the aspects of NACI that we have that has been very prevalent in the recent years that I've been involved in is the recognition that we mustn't only focus exclusively on science and technology in the classical terms, but refer more to indigenous knowledge development and especially to try and encourage innovation within rural communities. The Minister herself referred to some of the initiatives, and we heard from Mr. Patel also of some of the initiatives there, which is great, which is, again, a source of great encouragement to bring more and more people into the economy. To try and become more competitive through improving the infrastructure in the direction of enhancing innovation and facilitating innovation. And then obviously at the heart of it all is to ensure and provide advice on how to develop a skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path. the ministry too has responded favorably to the review recommendations in the past. We have, it's basically responsible for providing a CEO at the secretariat able to report to the minister. At present, that has been a bit of a problem in the last year or so. We have not had a full-time CEO. Fortunately, we've had acting CEO who's been very capable, but it's but that is, of course, going to be one of the objectives over the coming year to appoint a permanent CEO. Acknowledging, the minister has acknowledged NACI's coordination role and appointing high-level business representation on the council. And again, I refer to something that the minister said earlier this morning that I think is absolutely critical. Here I'm talking as an economist, for the success of our economy going forward, and which has been lacking thus far, and that is coordination and cooperation between private and public sector bodies. I think this country's economy could move massively forward if there was greater coordination and cooperation, both across departments within government, but also between government and private sector bodies. But the encouraging thing is the new council has been expanded to include many, to include several representatives of business as well as heads of various councils in different areas of the economy and different disciplines. And I think that that should provide greater expertise and progress in the kind of advice that is given to the minister. The terms of reference obviously were developed for NACI, defining its relationship with government. This is quite a busy chart table, but essentially what it says is NACI starts off by looking at the NSI and saying what needs to be done to bring the coordinate the NSI into the NDP and to ensure that the strategies and policies are adopted, and also to monitor over time the success in actually implementing innovation strategies. And of course this is very close to my heart personally, because as I say, I had been a project director in recent years on the collection of indicators to try and track the innovation system. And in this regard, I have to say that there are still some huge gaps. It's all very well to track what we are achieving in terms of educational inputs in the country. And you saw the Director General actually, sorry, it wasn't the DG, it was one of his assistants actually showing some of the objectives, which seems extraordinarily ambitious, but as the minister said, it's also realistic in the sense that it provides us with that ambition to go forward. But what we also, what we have identified as a big gap at the moment is actually being able to plot, even if we do succeed in creating and generating skills, to what extent do those actually find their way into generating the kind of innovation that is needed to enhance the production side of the economy. And so increasingly we're trying to develop the indicators to plot, to track how the development of educational expertise then feeds through into actually manifesting itself in terms of real productive outcomes. And and then the final phase is to make recommendations that can possibly lead to legislation that can enhance the implementation of projects. The minister has asked us in particular to review the White Paper on Science and Technology of 1996 and to come forward. That's one of the big, come forward with responses, and that is one of the big tasks that NACI hopes to achieve over the coming year. This tends to repeat some of the issues that I've said. It's basically to identify what needs to be done, to then work out a way of implementing the advice program, monitoring the success we have in innovation, and then putting forward some suggestions with regard to legislation. The annual performance plan coincides with that of obviously national government, and an advisory work program has been put forward that is responsive to the needs of the objectives that I have outlined here. Now, let me turn to some of the specific projects that NACI has been engaged in and hopes to keep engaging in over the coming year. The first is, and we've got little sub-councils that are subcommittees that are actually dealing and overseeing these projects, which the Secretariat is then responsible for. The first is gender mainstreaming in the system of technology and innovation, and that is to try and track how well we are doing and to make recommendations of bringing in the female gender more actively into science and technology and innovation, and tracking how well we're doing in that. Obviously, on the educational side, it is critical to develop the skills in math, science, and technology. Just as an aside, I often illustrate the point, this need, and here it's just an anecdotal one, by looking at the annual matric exam results and plotting them back 12 years to see how many students who started school end up doing sufficiently well in maths and science. And I could show you with numbers that, for example, in 2003, 1.25 million students began school, and in 2014, 12 years later, 30,000 managed to get 60% for maths in matric. That's 2.5% of those who started. Now, that's a huge challenge, but it needs to be developed in due course to achieve the kind of science and technology outcomes we need. You'll be encouraged again, Honourable Lottering, to see that one of the newly identified objectives is to upscale innovation solutions in support of SMMEs. We are only too aware that there's been a shortage of innovation directed at small business. A lot of the innovation in the business sector is being conducted by big businesses rather than the small business sector. Then, of course, we're also focusing on developing and research for innovation in through the infrastructural program of the country, and especially in rural areas to develop indigenous research and innovation. And then assessing the link between the NSI and trying to bring it into greater alignment with the objectives of the National Development Plan. And then on the bioeconomy strategy, to also focus on research into that area and innovation to facilitate food security in the country from a longer-term point of view and to uplift many rural communities. Some of the outputs that we hope to achieve over the coming year, starting off with input into the framework for a decadal plan to go look much further than just the coming year. As I mentioned, the feedback on the report on feedback report, to develop a feedback report on the white paper, which the Minister has asked us to do, to try and provide rapid advice on pertinent issues. I've been associated in the last month with trying to respond to a letter put to us by the Minister requesting information as to why, for example, the amount of expenditure on research and development by the business sector has been in decline. And I saw some of the graphs put forward by the DG here, and there's no question that R&D spend has fallen in line with the slowdown in overall economic growth and the slowdown in capital formation generally. So it's not independent of that. That's just one of the issues that one specific one that's immediately in my own mind. The innovation scorecard, obviously I mentioned, developing indicators to track this, and in support of that, we are hoping to produce, we intend to publish our annual indicators booklet, which we've tried to refine a little further in the coming year and hope to publish it next month for the 2013-14 year, covering indicators which I would love to see being advertised a little more comprehensively in the business sector and within government as well. It's a very, I think, provides a lot of useful information and is also starting to benchmark us against other countries, including the BRICS countries, for example, not just against the United States and the UK and so on, but against countries with greater similarities to our own socially. And then the final point is trying to encourage stakeholder consultation in the field of science and technology. There are a huge number of little initiatives that are taking place in the STI environment at the moment that I've been exposed to since I've been associated with NACI. And I just think that there could be so much more progress in innovation in South Africa, and if all the players were actually to coordinate their efforts together and to know what each other is doing and to try and dovetail from that point of view. Finally, the budgetary allocation, there you see, sadly, there is an increase of 1% in the budgetary allocation according to the MTEF in the 16-17 year, and a further 5% or so in the following year. So unfortunately there has been a reduction in the growth of in the real budget allocated to NACI, but I suppose that applies to many other departments as part of the deficit reduction program of the government. And this is simply just the chart showing you the membership of the secretariat. I hope it's not a bad omen that there are 13 members there right now. I suppose there can be. So that is my brief presentation, and I'm happy to take questions if I can hopefully answer them coming in on at a late point.
Yeah, the BDG is here, and Mr. Makode, so they will support. Thank you. As I indicated, chairperson, and thank you very much to Mr. Jamin for the presentation on behalf of NACI. He's an old soldier in NACI, and we really value the advice given the economic and business experience that he has. But we have charged NACI to do more. We're strengthening NACI's role. We think it has potential that has been underutilized. So we are drawing on its current strength to really help us to develop the system further. But we have an able team able to respond to questions members might pose. I do have to attend another meeting. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Mr. Maybe let's thank you very much for presenting yourself, Minister. We know you are very busy, but as Zala.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much. You can switch off that one, Dr. Jamin. Thank you very much, Dr. Jamin. Sometimes you ask yourself a question. We just had a presentation by the department, and we all agree that they are doing well. Do they still need an advisor? We tend to think that they need an advisor because we don't think they are arrogant. They would listen to you. And now the interesting thing is that you are coming with good strategy as to how you are going to be advising them. So it would be, but the members are going to be asking you. I think the painful thing is that when you don't know something, you think that's where you can cast down. And if we don't know what science and technology is all about, when they are cast to be done, We just say, let's cut in science and technology, and that's it. And nobody shouts for science and technology, and we all keep quiet, and yet we know that it is key. But thank you for your presentation. It's very clear, it's very straightforward, but I'm sure the members would engage you on some of the things. But I'm worried about the chairperson, because the way you've presented it, it's like a coup. You might take over the Okay, members.
No, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Doctor, for the presentation. It's good that the Minister left, you know, so that probably we can get a good question, a good answer. No, no, you know, advisory bodies, Chair, they're just advisory bodies. Sometimes they're there, they advise on issues, and, to an extent that they sometimes feel like, what is the use of us being here? Because we put our time aside, you know, we thoroughly look at issues and we present. When we finish presenting, you know, it's like we have not presented anything. It's just next. So they've presented the next item on the agenda, which has got nothing to do with what was presented. In most cases, you find such things. What are your experiences? Do you face such difficulties? Thanks, Chair.
Maybe, Dr. Chairman, what we should do, let's allow the members to talk. If you've got with the team that you're with, you just drop them down, and then we've looked at your brain and we think that it can manage to keep all the things that they're going to say. You won't forget them. Okay, Anneli.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps I can just say that maybe the department is performing so well because of the advice that they've been given. I would just like to, well, first of all, also thank you for the slide, the fourth slide. I think that gives quite a good overview of basically how everything fits together. That's the Science, Technology and Innovation Advisory System that you showed, so that helps quite a lot. Then I would just like to know, in terms of achievements and the advice that you do give to the Minister, you've mentioned quite a few things here, but I'm just curious to know, and this perhaps also has to do with the fact that what my colleague Nick Kurnoff earlier said, that many of the department's work, other department's work, are actually also part of what we are doing, and that concerns energy. And have you given any advice to the Minister in terms of research into energy issues such as shale gas, the problems we have with our power generators, things like that, alternative energy models? Have you been asked to give that kind of advice, or have you actually initiated that kind of advice? Thank you.
We saw those two hands, and I think it's only those are difficult to respond. There has been a debate, Dr. Jamin. You know, I was reminded when they talked about wine. I'm a doctor by profession. You know, when you overdo alcohol, there are other health issues. There's been a debate, not only about alcohol, but there's been a debate even about tobacco, which can generate a lot of tests, can do a lot of things and whatnot. But at the same time, on the other side, there are medical conditions that I would be interested to hear your views as to that particular, those two particular ones. I'm saying this being a medical professional, but I don't have a side. I'm very objective, and I'm a lateral thinker. So I don't have a strong position in either, because on one side, you've got to boost the economy of the country. Not to forget that they've got to be healthy. I'll leave it at that.
In response to the first question about has the advice been implemented? We have had some frustration in the past at feeling as NACI that we have provided advice and that it has not, it's kind of just been put away and not actually been implemented. All I can say is that I'm hoping that, and I get the sense, especially with the minister having taken the trouble to actually listen to my presentation and in the past also to in the recent past since she's become minister to become to interact with NACI, that there is a far closer ear from the DSD to what NACI provides. But you know, one mustn't be critical of the department itself. The minister herself referred to the silos of different departments, and the DST is just one department. NACI falls within its ambit. Somehow, in order for the advice that NACI provides to actually become more effective, we have to circumvent the walls of these silos and interact with other departments. An attempt has been made to some extent in this by expanding the council and appointing councillors who actually broach some of the other areas of research. Garth Strachan is a member of the Executive Council of NACI and is also Deputy Director General of the DGI. So I'm hoping that that will start seeing a little bit more of an interaction between the two. We've got the head of the research foundations, the CSIR, all providing the agricultural representatives, all on the council now, and I'm hoping that we'll be able to start cross pollinating a lot of the research that so that it can filter through and be implemented beyond just the ambit of the DST. And that also applies to energy, where Professor Anton Everhart is now on NACI. In answer to your question, Honourable Lottering, there is, I found it quite interesting, both your question and the chairman's question, because my own company has done quite a lot of research in these areas. We had been at the forefront, as you know, my late colleague, Tony Twine, was the first to come out with the recommendations about the huge game changer that shale gas could actually turn out to be. But NACI itself has not actually been active in that research in the recent past. I don't know, am I wrong in saying that, Nozipo?
No, you're correct, Satish. I mean, except for this, save for the fact that energy is one of the areas that have been identified by the Council for rapid advice this year. It's energy, water, food security, entrepreneurship, job creation. So in the past we haven't done it, but in the new Council they have prioritized these areas.
So I think you can draw some encouragement from that, Honourable Lottering. And in the last question with regard to alcohol and tobacco, my company was commissioned to do research into the advisability or not of banning alcohol advertising and tobacco advertising. And the conclusion we drew is that it can actually be counterproductive, because it starts setting up all sorts of illicit ways of trying to get the, you know, take to bypass some of these laws. And also one has to bear in mind that there is quite an important revenue collection attribute from alcohol and tobacco, which we see every year in terms of the increases in the taxes that the government does. And I think it, again, could become counterproductive to act too forcefully against those interests, it can eventually cost jobs in quite a meaningful way if one is not careful. With so many of these things in economics, it is very seductive to attack the symptom without thinking through what impact it might finally have on the entire system at the end of the day.
You know, on Monday, my wife had a meeting here in Cape Town. She came all the way from Eastern Cape. I didn't want to talk to you, but in case you tell her what I'm doing in Cape Town. But she came down and she went into one of the wine farms. And she's a staunch Christian. But when she came back home, she came back saying that, hey, wine is a big business and it can make a lot of money. And she said, they made me taste it and I like it. And then I got to worry. We've accepted your strategy plan. And we're going to be looking forward in making sure that we oversight you on what you said you're going to do. You must tell the chairperson that you've done so well that there can be a coup. If there's a coup, we would actually follow you and support you. No, thank you very much. And you have actually put it very briefly, and we understand exactly what it is all about, and we'll be able to monitor you. If you could just tell us who are those other people that you are with, so that at least we know them, those that you are with, then we can call it a day.
Thanks, Jay. When I was sitting at the back, I was wearing my cap at the BST as acting DDG for institutional planning and support. I'm now wearing my cap as the acting head for NACI, probably for the next 15 days or so until a new head is found. Thanks. My name is Tommy McCordy.
Thank you, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Nozi Pomaume. I'm a Chief Specialist at the NACI Secretariat.
Thank you, Chair and the Honourable Members. My name is Petrus Letaba. I'm the Senior Specialist at NACI, responsible for monitoring, evaluation, and the indicators.
Thank you very much. If there's nothing, we'll call it a day. Thank you very much, Dr. Chairman and the team. Thank you, Department. We're still here, the people from the donor. Thank you very much. Thank you, members.
Thank you, sir.
Because that, you must...